I'm going to read the last couple paragraphs of my foreword of the book, Space Wars. Space Wars depicts an uncertain, chilling world of tomorrow. Yet it was aptly framed by Thatcher's premise almost 10 years ago. Today, Islamic fervor for terror is escalating, and rogue states are flexing their muscles in a cauldron of geopolitical chaos. And as there have always been, opportunists abound. In 2010, the United States could easily find itself in a national security dilemma as both commercial and military satellites mysteriously go silent. Next up, your questions with our two guests on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Bill and Mike, have you been approached yet for a possible movie with this?
Not that I know of, Bill. I don't think you have you?
No, we've not been approached, but several potential movie makers are reading the manuscript right now.
Okay, they should, because to me it's a natural, and it's very timely as well. And it's also, and I've got to tell you, I know you're not here to scare people, but it is a scary book.
Good point, George. You know, and we're not trying to be alarmist, but we do want to, just join that clarion call about better awareness of issues like this.
You know, and I don't want people to accuse you two of being warmongers. You know, if anything, it's the defense of a livelihood that's at stake here. And yeah. As, you know, I'm concerned, I'll tell you what I'm really concerned about, not just 2010 or a little beyond that. I'm concerned about the next 30 to 50 years on this planet, where most nations will have some incredible technology. And even though we may still be ahead of the pack, and the Chinese will be strong, and the Russians will be strong, and Japan will be strong, so many other nations will have the capability of doing these incredible things. That's the scary part for me.
Well, and when you think about Bill's point earlier, this transparency that space can help create, the more integrated and the more transparent the actions, then less of a chance of that tipping point, at least by the major players. It will then become incumbent upon the major players to really join in and dealing with the ideologues and those non-nation state actors that really are about chaos and destruction.
Okay, go ahead. Someone else was going to jump in there.
Yes, I was going to say, George, that historically, technology is a two-edged sword. You know, it can be used for weapons and for, you know, increasing the level of destruction. Nuclear weapons were like that. But the other side of nuclear energy was peaceful, you know, and there are many, many reactors around the world now providing cheap, clean energy for many, many people. So as technology advances and spreads throughout the world and more nations do become technologically more and more savvy, we have the potential for actually enhancing peace and bettering the lives of everybody.
To the phones we go, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Good. Hey, great show tonight.
Thank
Love
you
guys' shows. I live in Lodi, California. My name is James. And we had a terrorist cell in Lodi, one of the earlier ones, quite a few years back after 9/11. And I was just wondering if either of the guests had any opinions on if there was or if there still is a terrorist plot here towards California, Northern California. I've heard both ways saying there is and isn't. So I was just wondering if you had an opinion on that.
Well, James, Mike here. I think the key is awareness. Whether it physically exists in the Lodi area or Northern California, the key is just about being aware of all that's happening around you, aware of the world dynamics that George's show brings to bear for all of us to think through these issues. But I would say that just as 9/11 surprised all of us, none of us should be surprised if other issues do come to our shores in the way of this type of activity. But also you should know there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of hard work to prevent that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
And, James, have a good evening.
James, if I could add, this is Bill. The the incident yesterday at Fort Dix, I think, reinforces exactly what Mike said, that there are probably many cells throughout the U.S. that are, you know, hidden. Many of them could be homegrown. But at the same time, the fact that that cell was uncovered and caught through the diligence, starting with an average citizen.
Yep, who saw video. He saw video. They asked him to duplicate it, and he called the feds, and the rest is history.
So it really behooves all of us to be alert, and as Mike said, there are many, many people who are working full-time to make sure every one of those cells is unsuccessful.
What would both of you do, we'll start with you, Mike, to take care of this problem?
The homegrown?
Well, just the overall scenario to avoid space wars, for example. How would we get out of this?
Yeah, first and foremost is the awareness. And that awareness, once an American public becomes more galvanized about particular issues, and through that awareness, putting that pressure on, especially in this case, congressional, there's enough on the not just this administration, but previous administrations who have worked national space security. The military has clamored for years about the importance of that space security, but it hasn't reached enough attention both on the legislative side of the House or the public at large. And I think with what I would do, I would advocate for continued awareness, not scare tactics, but continued awareness and push for and demand for improved space security and awareness.
Putin goes crazy when we do our missile tests. Does he say anything when the Chinese take out one of their own satellites in their own test?
Well, he didn't make a public fuss about it, but rest assured that somebody went in and briefed him and said, you cannot believe what they've just caused up there for all of us.
I mean, are they more advanced, the Chinese, than the Russians now?
I won't say that they have more capability, but given the Chinese ability to create technologies, would not be a surprise to see them leapfrog ahead.
First-time caller line, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
This is Tim from Truro, Iowa.
Hey, Tim.
I'm up in North Dakota right now, and I know a lot of strange stuff happens on your show all the time, and I just wanted to say, you guys were talking about 45 minutes ago about who's going to take the satellites out first.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, I lost my XM radio for about 25 minutes. Right before you went to break, it came back on.
There we are.
Rest assured that Bill and Mike here have not created any of that as part of the show.
Okay. You guys do a great job. I've been listening to you for many years as I can remember. You guys have a good night. Thank you.
All right. That's an interesting comment, huh? Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Dan from Miami.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. It's nice to hear you folks on the radio tonight. It's enlightening. And I was just wondering, I had heard George speak of a thought that was in my mind for the last 2 years, which is reconfiguring and upgrading our special forces. Are you aware that this is going on to some degree? Question one. And then question number two. What would you attribute a lack of us getting nailed right on the chin by some cell group that if they wanted to, they could, in fact, hurt us either with a dirty bomb or something? Something is either holding them back from hitting us hard, or they're working on something very, very big. I don't think it is the George Bush administration that is necessarily clamped down so hard that they decided, well, that's too hard a target. So the question really is, what would you attribute our current luck to? And I believe that would be the right word, but I'd like to know from you. And do you believe that we really have to upgrade and reconfigure our special forces? I'll be listening on the radio. Thank you very much.
Okay, who wants that?
I'll take the first one.
Okay.
Are we upgrading our special forces? I think it's been public knowledge for some time that we are definitely putting a lot more money into beefing up the special forces. More and more of them, better equipment, and but just by their nature, we don't hear too much about what they're doing, where they're going, what kind of activities they're undertaking, and where. But I think we can rest assured that more and more special forces are being trained and deployed. Mike, you want to take the second?
Sure. Dan, regards your second question about being nailed on the chin, let me just highlight a couple of things. One is the president and in George Tenet's recent book, Center of the Storm, have talked about some of the things that have been stopped, whether the number is 10, 15, or 20 possible major hits on the United States or United States interests. That has occurred. The other measure, and you've you teased it a bit, and there's some luck involved. But I would say to you, to make a major hit, it does take an accumulation of capabilities. To accumulate the capabilities means that you create a signature. And what I mean by a signature, there's movement, more people get involved, there's more chance for discovery, and it's been those major capability attempts and the signatures that have been created that have given us the opportunities for prevention at this point. I would not be so sanguine to say that, well, that means we will always be able to do that. But it is that vigilance that's so important to us. And as George talked about earlier in the show, it's also about proactive. And that's about going out and not just being defensive.
And if I could add, it really means thinking out of the box all the way along. And I think we have some people who are doing that. We have to address these unconventional threats with unconventional means of detection and countering them.
Okay, let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Oh, hi. My name is Clarice, and I'm calling from Toronto,
hi,
Canada.
Hi, Clarice.
Hi, George. Your program is just excellent tonight. And the book written, Space Wars, it sounds absolutely fascinating. Now, my question is that you're probably well aware that Canada is now a conservative government and France has become a conservative government. But what if in 2008 the Americans elect a Democratic president, a liberal president? What effect does your guest think it will have on the defense of the United States and their enemies?
Clarice, hi. This is Mike here, and hello to our wonderful Canadian neighbors to the north.
Thank you. We love you.
We have a lot of your countrymen here in the Colorado area as part of our NORAD contingent.
Oh, yeah.
And we enjoy that presence of the Canadians.
Oh, wonderful. We love you.
I would answer your question by saying that over the years, as we have moved from Democratic to Republican administrations, and I'm talking about just in the last 20 years, we don't see great upheavals in the nation's ability or the nation's will in some of these areas. We may see shifts in the political or policy approaches, but I wouldn't be too concerned about how radical a shift could occur.
And lapses. I mean, Clinton,
and lapses,
Clinton could have gotten bin Laden, I think, under his administration.
That is not a province of a particular administration. That is back to the issue of will and how far forward will we lean. But Clarice, I think that as these governments come and go, it's the people and the people's will that helps us sustain.
Well, and here's the problem with the Iraqi situation. What has happened to our will? I mean, first of all, would Americans at this point support some kind of intervention into Iran? I'm not so sure.
I think that would be tough. George, given the circumstance we have today, because the nation itself does not feel at war. The military is at war, but as a people, we don't feel that. And for lots of reasons we can go into.
Here's, I think, the flaw that this administration did. When they had tremendous support to go into Afghanistan in October of 2001, they should have done whatever they needed to do to finish this Bin Laden situation. And I believe he's alive, unlike some other people who think that he's been dead and we didn't want to create a martyr here. I think he's alive. We should have done whatever we could to take him out and these real terrorist camps that are all over the place. And the money and the resources we've wasted on what was already a contained Saddam Hussein is absolutely incredible. And, you know, we should have worried about the Koreas, North Korea, and Iran. I think Saddam Hussein was in shackles practically, wasn't he?
Mike here, what you're saying is we took our eye off the ball. And in many respects, and yes, he was, in fact, somewhat in shackles. It was absolutely despicable what he was doing to his own people. No question about
that. That's where those little elitist groups we talked about go in and do what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you maybe already talked to a general and say, hey, we're going to do this. Let's get it done.
It's kind of interesting, George. In our Space Wars book, we actually have a new president in 08. As you know, the book takes place in 2010. But the 08 election brings in a more liberal president that, is determined to go a different direction than the current administration is. But when we start losing satellites in the book, we see this president struggling with how to respond. And the president, as Mike said, quickly comes around to do whatever is necessary to protect the nation and its people.
Yeah, as long as it's reasonable and smart. And that's the important thing. We'll take another call before the break, and then we'll come back with final phone calls. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, it's Tampa Mark. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
Tampa Mark.
I got a few ideas I'd like to run by you here. I got complete faith in the government, their integrity, and our technology. We're forefront in the world. You remember when Clinton sold the Chinese ballistic software from L'Oreal, you know, his campaign contributor?
Yep.
You know, I got a real hard time stomaching that even he would do such a treasonous act. Who's to say that we don't have a back door in here? You know, the Chinese go off the deep end, and they launch some stuff at us, and there we go. Oh, there goes those crazy Chinese. You know, hey, hit the button, General. And they turn around and go right back where they come from, you know?
Possibility.
Or say, Microsoft. You know, software all over the world. Who's to say, Bush can't just get on a horn? Hey, Bill, it's time to do that thing we talked about. And, you know, Bill hits it, and everything all over the world just goes zap. Right?
What do you think, Mike?
Oh, well, hey, how about another one? GPS, right? Don't we kind of control that? They start launching stuff at us. Everybody is controlled by our GPS satellites. We scramble the signals. Boom, they turn around and go where we want them.
Who wants it?
I was going to answer your comment there for the listener is that these are the kinds of things that make great scenarios. And whether they are real or not is not as important as thinking through the range of those kinds of scenarios to see what could or could not be done and or what could or could not happen.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take your final phone calls now with our two special guests as we talk about Space Wars, the first 6 hours of World War III. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Bill Scott and Mike Komatas and the rest of your phone calls. And I know a lot of people have been on hold for a long time, so we'll go right to those calls. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Joe from Turlock, California.
Hi, Joe. Thank you.
How are you doing tonight?
We are well.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to find out what your guests feel about one of the situations with 9/11 and the conspiracy theories about what crashed into the Pentagon. How there's such a small hole created in the entrance and through many of the interior walls. If such a large airplane should have hit this thing, it seems like there would have been a lot of wreckage and so forth in the yard, and how there was a lot of cameras confiscated right after it and so forth.
All right, Joe, though they're not here to talk about that, if either one of you wants to comment on that, you're more than welcome to. Mike or Bill?
Hi, this is Bill. I don't know anything more than anybody else does out there, but based on my experience testing airplanes for many, many years, I really think that what we saw there is definitely in concert with what could easily happen. You know, the bottom line is, yes, it's a big lane, big airplane, going at a certain speed, but the Pentagon was a pretty tough target there too. And depending on exactly where you hit, you could soak up a lot of that energy very quickly.
And a lot of people said, how could these trainee pilots do that? Well, that's another case all by itself. Thanks for the call, Joe. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Jerry from Southern Oklahoma.
Okay, Jerry.
I'm sorry I called the wrong line. I apologize about that.
That's all right.
I want to just really tell you I'm honored to talk to your guests, and I feel funny about calling about their first name because I'm prior military. I can't call them Bill and Mike. They are sirs.
Bill, thank you for your service.
I'd go back again if they'd had me, but I'm getting a little old. I would like to ask y'all's opinion about the security of our borders and the possibility of urban warfare when we do, if we do, pull out.
Well, that is a good question. Mike, that one might be for you.
Well, the borders are obviously fairly porous. They are intentionally that way from our historical relationships with Canada and Mexico. There are issues that we need to deal with regarding the porosity of our borders. Space assets can go a long way to help. The near space assets that Bill talked about earlier can go a long way to help that. As far as urban warfare is concerned, my personal opinion is we're a long way away from that in this country. But we've always been surprised historically, and that's back to our theme of awareness.
Yes, sir. I understand that. George,
yes, sir.
One question for you. Going back to all the guests that you've had in the past, you've had predictions of urban warfare coming to the United States very recent and in the near future.
And John Teeter, the alleged time traveler, apparently left behind his thoughts that we'd be in the middle of urban and civil war. And, you know, that's always possible. I mean, we saw what happened in France last year. You know, when the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, you're going to have those kinds of problems. And, you know, my vision is that we've got to be able to do something for the poor in this country. We're losing the middle class. And as we continue to create this distinction, it's going to open us up, I think, to more and more problems. Okay, Jerry?
Yes, sir. I'm listening to you. I just, I'm a ranch for a living. And I'm way out in the middle of nowhere. I just wonder what's going to happen to urban America when the satellites go down. It's not going to bother me.
Well, I don't know. How do you get your electricity?
I've got a generator.
Yeah, but it'll only last so long, right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but I think we'd be self-sufficient.
And you probably have an electric pump for your well, so that gets affected.
Well, but I also have a hand pump if I had to, but it's not going to water my cattle.
No, you'd be pumping forever if you had to do that.
No, I can't do that.
I had a little horse farm in Illinois, and every once in a while when we had a power outage, I did not have a generator. You know, we had to pump in water from, you know, you'd call one of these trucks that would come in for you and just give it to you. I mean, that's a mess. But, it will affect you, Jerry, eventually. If the grid, the grid goes down, the satellites are all connected to it, so you don't have television or your telephone. But once the power goes and everything else goes, you know, I don't think trucks will be able to travel around as much.
Jerry, this is Bill. You said you're a rancher, but there are an awful lot of farmers out there now that are relying on GPS to very accurately plant their crops and water them and to fertilize them right down to a matter of inches. And they are so accurate now that they can put GPS systems on their planters. And in the fall when they actually do the tilling and do the planting and put down a line of fertilizer, they can map the field so accurately now using GPS for, you know, automated tractor and combine driving now, that when they go back next spring, they can actually put another row of fertilizer within just a few inches of where those seeds were planted. So that's extremely effective and efficient, because now those seeds have a much better chance of rooting properly and growing much bigger, so the yield is bigger. And that's a roundabout way of saying that it does affect you, because that has a lot to do with the price of the feed that you're feeding those cattle.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
How are you going today?
Good.
I have a question for you. I don't know, do any of the countries have the capability of knocking out the other country's satellite, like, say, by going on the computer and doing it by computer?
By computer?
Yeah, like you were saying, start bombing their satellites out of the sky, that we can, someone can hack into their satellite and knock it offline.
This is Bill.
Okay, go ahead, Bill.
They really don't have the capability of knocking a satellite out. Theoretically, it's just a matter of hacking.
Can you take over it?
It's unlikely, because those links are pretty well guarded now. That said, we've seen time and again where hackers can get in. In our Space Wars book, we actually do have a cyber war scenario in there. It's our guys trying to take down another country's air defense system by sticking, you know, through the internet system, putting a worm in the other guy's system. So that really falls under the heading of cyber war. Doesn't really take down the satellites, but I would say that a really, really good hacker, and there are plenty of them in China, for instance.
Oh yeah,
they could cause us problems, I would think, in the network, not necessarily the satellite itself. You're not knocking it out, but you have to remember that the satellite is nothing more than where the information starts. And by the time the information gets to where it's going, a hacker might be able to do some damage to that information flow. Mike, do you have any thing to add?
No, I think that's well summed up, Bill.
First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hi, this is Don, the paper boy from Brainerd, and I'm happy to hear everybody's fine.
Brainerd, Minnesota.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
I have a technical rather than a political question here for a refreshing change.
Okay.
As I understand, there's some concern about all of the space junk and satellites in near-Earth orbit and something called a cascade.
Okay.
And what I was wondering is, if somebody used a nuclear weapon or some other form of weapon to knock out a bunch of satellites, or a bad solar flare knocked out a bunch of satellites, and we put a bunch more satellites in orbit without being able to deorbit or retask or correct the orbits of the satellites that are already up there, if there's a possibility that we may never be or may not be able to for a long time rely on putting satellites up because of so much space junk, it'd be unsafe for them.
What do you think? I'll give that to you, Bill.
Space debris is a definite problem, and it's getting worse and worse. When the Chinese shot down their own satellite earlier this year, it's estimated they added to that space junk about 10%. So we're talking, Mike, on the order of 10,000 objects up there already. So, but they can be as small as a few centimeters or as large as a rocket body.
Can they track something that small?
Down to a matter of a centimeter or two, yes. And we do.
Amazing.
We actually have a space catalog that the first, Space Control Squadron here that's in Colorado Springs, but it is being moved to Vandenberg Air Force Base, and that's their job.
All right, another industry will be created because of space. It will be the Space Waste Disposal Company.
Yeah, I think Hoover might be a good candidate there.
You go up there and just take the junk, and you literally become the sanitation engineer of the solar system.
It's needed, believe me.
East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
I've always been an ABMA ATK fan myself. I've always been skeptical of space planes and small payloads myself. I would believe that the Ares V heavy lift launch vehicle would make more sense than it would afford us large armed and armored satellites capable of both offense and self-defense. Wouldn't it make more sense to be shooting down at intact enemy missiles coming up rather than shooting up at enemy warheads already coming down? We've got some of these interceptor drones saying, okay, that's the nose cone, that's the MIRV bus, that's the decoy, here's the warhead, whoops, I done passed it.
Good point. Mike?
Well, it's, you know, I think the listener has got some good points, and absolutely that type of capability is certainly needed, but I don't think we want to put all our eggs in one basket. But I wouldn't deny the heavy lift and the requirements for heavy lift.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I have a question for Bill there.
Okay.
Say, you know, as you look at the whole scenario, I think it's possible to decapitate our national command authority with existing technology. I think when we took MX offline, when he took the three warhead bus off the Minuteman, we're sticking our neck out a mile. We put permissive action link on our Trident boats. I mean, the vulnerability of our communications anywhere along the line is a chain, and you knock out to couple of links of that, and we can be up the creek, and with our coastal cities and the vulnerability of them, and you know, and all this public thing about ABM. Sir, I make the suggestion that the only place that Bush can get money is to take it out of our strategic forces, and I'm telling you, we're running a bare ass right now, aren't we?
Well, obviously, the expenditures we're having to make to conduct the war right now are stressing our military across the board, as well as other areas of the economy. But if I could just drop back to what you said about communications in particular, is a chain, and if you break it, we're in trouble. That's true. But I believe nowadays, in many, many ways, we have a very distributed communications network. It is a mixture of satellites, ground links, microwave links on the ground, etc. But I think the big problem is not that we break the chain, but that we stress the chain. And in our Space Wars book, we do show how if you lose a certain number of communication satellites, high-capacity communication satellites, one of the things that happens in particular is that you're forcing more and more telephone calls, let's say, or data streams into smaller and smaller pipes. So if we lose some of the international communications capabilities because we've lost some satellites, you force those lines or those data streams into undersea cables, for instance. And there's only so many of those. You know, we really don't have an excess of those. So very quickly, you can get into a situation of overloading. And as we point out in the book, that people become very frustrated because they pick up the phone to try to call Australia, and they get nothing but busy signals for hours and hours. So I think that may be one of the potential problems that we face if we did lose a lot of our communications capabilities.
Well, you know, we have seen what happens when the grid system goes down. A couple of years ago in you know, some of the Midwestern states, I mean, it was a nightmare for people.
Yeah, it does cascade. You know, you lose one, overloads another part of the grid, and then that crumbles too. So very quickly you can have a widespread outage just because you overload different sectors.
The dangers of being too technologically inclined is that it all backfires and you go back to the dark ages.
That's right. And I think if you look on the back of the book there, George, Gene Cernan pretty much wrapped it up. You know, Gene was an astronaut for Gemini, Apollo, and he was the last man to walk on the moon.
And this is what he says: unless we are willing to accept the fact that there are some out there who are fanatically bent on destroying us, space wars could be profoundly prophetic.
We could be reduced, or could be relegated back several decades in our ability to conduct daily life. just because we lose some of that technology we've learned to rely on, and then very quickly we're back to, you know, decades ago way of doing it. In the military sense, I've heard it said that if we were to lose certain sectors of our space infrastructure, very quickly we're back to fighting wars like we did in Vietnam, Korea, and even World War II in some ways.
Almost sounds like Star Trek, doesn't it? We need a federation.
There you go.
East of the Rockies, time for one quick call. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, sir.
How you doing, guys? Leading up to what you were just talking about, too much technology, what do you think about the idea of decommissioning the SR-71? I mean, you know, that could have been converted not only as a spy plane, but as a communications platform. And, you know, because listening to you guys tonight, I never realized the fragility of our satellites. Have a good night, and I'm going to hang up and listen to
All
your
right,
reply.
Well, that's for you, Bill. We've got a minute left.
I'll make a quick one and then leave it to Mike. The SR-71, I felt, was still an extremely good capability, and I never did understand why we retired it.
All right, Mike, 30 seconds.
As a former pilot, I love that airplane. But, George, I would also like to take this time to thank you again on behalf of Bill, Scott, Bill Burns, and myself for your gracious forward and for this wonderful evening we've had, and for the callers that you had. They were terrific.
They are the brightest in radio, I'll tell you. Thank you so much. Space Wars, incredible book. It's a novel, but it could happen. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbeth, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.